Okay, welcome back. Hour number three. And we're going to talk about Bill Tompkins as a young man and his experiences in the Battle of Los Angeles. George, what were you doing in February of 1942? Do you remember? Well, Frank, you can't answer that question.
No, I can't, but I can tell you, George has a personal story regarding one of his relatives who also witnessed and experienced the Battle of L.A.
Oh, I hope we... There he is.
He was going to share that with you tonight.
You there, George?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. You have a relative who was a witness to the battle in L.A. You want to tell us that little story?
My grandfather.
Uh-huh.
My grandfather left England and... Actually, Scotland, McFarland, Henry Duncan McFarland,
right.
Buried my grandmother and went to Illinois at first, became a chiropractor, and then went to California and lived in Beverly Hills next to Al Jolson.
Huh.
And during the war, he saw the battle of... L.A. going on overhead.
February 21st or 23rd, 1942.
Something like that. Now,
yeah.
He would come back to visit us and his daughter, and then he'd be in his all-white suit, and he'd tell my mother about seeing the UFO at L.A. and so on, and my mother would tell him about seeing... the UFO in our backyard by the pole.
Yeah.
And I would tell him about seeing the UFO over in the park, which is right across the street, which I looked at for all the time. The UFOs have been around our house and our family for generations.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, they've been tracking you. That's right.
Could be.
Okay.
I'm supposed to help them bring across this information that they exist in our hair.
Right. Yeah. The Battle of L.A. Looking for the date here.
Somebody here should
February 24th, 25th. That's it.
That's some more shot down.
Yeah. In fact, I think Bill Tompkins mentioned there was one shot down and went into the waters off Long Beach, and another one went down in the mountains east of LA.
Pasadena, I believe.
Yeah, Glendale, Pasadena, up somewhere in the Angeles National Forest. Now, those may have been American fighter planes, which were up in fairly large numbers, apparently. I have an eyewitness friend who's no longer with us, but she told me the whole story. She said they went at them four or five abreast, firing. She could see the guns, tracers, and then they'd peel off at the last minute. They didn't have any effect on it, but they were going at it. Now, they also were being shot at by their own men with the anti-aircraft. So
yep.
There was one plane that went down. I think it was El Monte, and they think it was one of our aircraft, and they put it on a flatbed truck and got it out of there real quick. So it's a lot of speculation. Much more to the story than we know about, that's for sure. It's called the Battle of Los Angeles. You can look it up online. Go ahead, George.
Well, there's also high-ranking officers watching it, so the whole country was,
right,
at least at government level, alert to the fact that there was something up there that probably was not Japanese and was some other type of craft. And
it
could...
wasn't Japanese, yeah.
Could... take the shells being shot at it and bounce them off, so to speak.
That's right.
Some kind of a force field that existed, which obviously is way ahead of anything that was available at that time. I'm pretty sure that the government by then knew that, UFOs existed. There's one that allegedly crashed in Missouri.
Cape Girardeau.
Right. Others that crashed supposedly in Germany. you know, whether all these stories are true, we don't know, but we've got pretty good backgrounds on them, mm-hmm. that they were existed, and you can still see the pictures of the fighting going on over L.A. That was a real...
Well, I have it actually up there right now, and if you look in guests, you'll see at the bottom there are three green video links. The first one is live-action film and stills of the Battle of L.A. Now, there's some. Somebody had an 8mm or a 16mm camera, and there was a lot of videotaping, excuse me, a lot of movie making going on, of which we have videos right now to show you. So you, while you're listening, you can go look at these three links. The first one is actual film and stills from the Battle of L.A. And the second one is a shortwave news broadcast. You want to listen to that when we're finished. And the third is a very interesting daylight overlay of the nighttime pictures to give you an idea of the scale of the battle. And these are really remarkably well done. Somebody deserves a big hat tip for that. Very, very nice.
Jeff, I had shared all these with Bill, and Bill was in complete concurrence with everything that you're going to be sharing tonight with this story.
Great. All right. Just for fun, let me pull up the live action film of the video. It's 2:32, and I don't believe it. There's a commercial here. I can skip this commercial in. Goodbye. Don't know if we have any music to the. No, they're just. It's silent. Starts out with the LA Times front cover, and then the classic picture, and then pictures that most people have never seen before. I got them all, put them together. Then there's some actual, there's a loop of some of the black and white film of a direct hit on the object. And then there's a magnificent panorama, wide angle shot. I loop it back. It's 1,002, 1,003. It's 3 seconds long. I looped it twice. And you can see that. It is stunning.
So, where do we find it on your website?
Say again. Go to guests. Scroll down to, oh, and there's another one. These are very short pieces of footage. And you'll see the real ones. The real motion picture pieces are stunning. See at the bottom, George, it's the very last green link. In the guests section. Oh, and there's another one. I haven't seen these in a year and a half. They're amazing. Let me know when you find it, George.
I'm looking.
Okay, on the left-hand side of the home page, you see my picture. Go down below that about 3 inches, and you'll see where it says Friday. George Filer, Frank Chile. Do you see it?
I see that.
All right. Now, look down about another 2 inches, and you'll see three green texts.
First one says,
that's it. That's the one. So click on that and watch. And let's, Frank, anything else to add? And I'll start Mr. Tompkins.
Bill was just so impressed to see that live-action footage, even as short as it was. He said, boy, it brought back so many memories.
Oh, I looped it. I should have looped it more, but it is stunning.
It is.
These are professional, probably Hollywood photographers who got their cameras out. They weren't going to miss something like this. This went on for quite a while, remember.
Right. Like 5 or 6 hours, right?
Yep. Here's
for another wonderful Bill. Conversation is Mr. William Tompkins. Bill has been with us, I don't know how many times now, but he has been obviously... nudged to become a main part of the ongoing disclosure of alien visitation, alien occupation, and the fact that we are out in the solar system and the universe with some extraordinary hardware that that we have in deep space. And we've talked about so many things, and you can listen to all of those conversations anytime you'd like just by going to Rents.com, looking over in the right-hand column, down to Bill Tompkins. You'll find it right there. The archives are all available. February 25th, 1942. What happened on that date? The Battle of Los Angeles.
Did you want to say something, George?
Yes, I was.
I heard a big crash there.
On my website, I've put up a, you may call it a biography of Williams that you can review. And it also shows evidence that the craft that he's talking about exists and are taking, you know, are shown on the screen and are in space. And as a matter of fact, if you're a listener and doubt all this, I encourage you to get out your binoculars or your telescope and start looking at the sky, and you may be surprised at what you see, that there are huge spaceships flying over us right at this moment.
Yeah.
And one interesting thing is there's a diary from President Reagan, most of whom who believe he tends to tell the truth, and his diary talks about these huge crafts and the fact that there's, this is 1985, craft above the United States. At that time, he's being shown information by six scientists, and they're showing him craft that hold 300 people. Now, to hold 300 people, that's a lot bigger than anything that we're aware of that's up there right now.
Think of how many bathrooms they must have on board.
Yeah, bathrooms, sleeping quarters.
Showers. Yeah.
We would assume they have some kind of communication gear and all these
Yes, I understand that zero gravity and water would make a pretty messy shower. I get that. But they'll run a fan and blow the direction of all the droplets downward so you can stand under a shower of water. We've already talked about this.
And I imagine there's some kind of weapon systems, you know, rail guns or lasers or whatever. The point is, it's a pretty large craft.
Yeah.
That President Reagan is talking about in official documents, and that William claims that he had something to do with the.
Do you have that Reagan? Do you have that Reagan document on Father's Files
on the website? On 34. I don't know if you got it, but
number 34. I don't think I did.
Yeah, I didn't receive it yet either, George.
I would have jumped that real quick. Issue number 34.
Jeff and George, Bill told me that the 17-kilometer-long craft that he designed were capable of holding 50,000 folks.
That's enough to fill a major stadium.
Yeah. And he said they would be comfortable on board that 17-kilometer-long ship. 50,000.
I guess.
50,000
okay.
being.
Yeah. All right, let's listen to Bill, see how much. We're not going to get the whole thing out, but you can all go there. Just look on the right-hand side for William Tompkins. Click on the link to the Major Archive page and look for the Battle of L.A. It's up near the top. And these three links are also there. Have you looked at that footage yet, George?
Yes, it's very interesting. I haven't seen that particular footage, but I've seen other footage that indicates that we're shooting at something.
Yeah. Well, I put that together from clips I got, and it's really something. I'm just amazed. The live footage. We have hours and hours of film. We're only given a little snippet here and there like that. So 8 seconds, 9 seconds worth at the most. But the government has it all. They got the whole damn thing.
Depending on that, if I was a whole safe full of it, they wouldn't give it to me, but
right. No,
they have a huge amount of film.
It was all recorded on film. Okay, here we go with William Tompkins.
That tonight and other things as well with Bill. I've got some videos to show you, which we'll look at as we get going here. And even a newscast that came, I believe, that next morning, February the 26th. It's a recording of a shortwave national newscast dealing with the Battle of Los Angeles and what went on over that city of almost 2 million so many years ago. Hello, Bill. Welcome back. How are you, my friend?
Real good, Vince. there you go. This should be really interesting this evening. Yeah. I think everybody's going to enjoy it.
Well, I hope so, and if they don't, they're missing something. Now, let me ask you, and just for you folks who don't know, Bill is, how old are you, Bill?
39. Actually, 93 next month it'll be 94.
Wow. I remember when you turned 93. Wow. Seems
only
yesterday. We've been working on this project quite a while. The idea of watching something like the Battle of Los Angeles is amazing to my mind. It may be the most watched UFO encounter, and I'm going to call it encounter. It wasn't just a sighting because it lasted a long time, and it involved the American military coastal defenses. World War II, December 7th, had just happened, and this object came over L.A., made one pass, and then made a second pass going back over L.A., and I mean Culver City, the west side, down to Long Beach, the whole thing. Fascinating, and it was shot at by dozens of ground batteries, and the videos you're going to see tonight are extraordinary. How old were you, Bill, when that happened?
Oh, I was still 39.
Okay, good enough. All right. So, in other words, you weren't in the crib with a baby bottle, and you were actually up and able to watch it.
That's right, yes.
Okay. Five people at least died that night, for those of you who don't know. There were fatalities, heart attacks, shrapnel came down. I think there was one automobile crash. This was a big deal. It started at 2:35 a.m. and went on for at least an hour. Big, big deal. Tell us the story, Bill.
Well, this is really interesting because nothing like this had ever happened, and Jeff, you're describing it as being one of the most important sightings, if you want to call it that, that's ever taken place. And it really is, because you're going to find that there were more than several vehicles involved. Okay. Well, essentially, my folks had moved to Long Beach, and we were living in a very large, expensive home that had been converted to four apartments, and the living rooms downstairs were all 18-foot ceilings, so the second floor is real high, and there was a enormous deck all the way across the back of the house, and we, of course, had an upstairs apartment. So we could overlook a lot of trees and a lot of buildings because we were so much higher.
Right.
Now, we were only four blocks from the beach, but, of course, there were other buildings between us and the beach, so we couldn't see the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
But around 7:30 in the evening, my brother and I were laying on the floor, and I think we were looking at the newspaper. My dad went out to the... My mom and dad were visiting her mother back in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was just the three of us. So my dad was out on the back deck, and he told... He said, "Boys, get out here right now." So we got up and went out to the deck in the back. And there was a small light just above the surface that we could see, which would be buildings and trees.
Mm-hmm.
And then this light got a little bit larger, and a very small beam came out of the light and focused down to what would be the ocean, because we couldn't see the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And so
what color was the beam, Bill? What color was the beam?
It was almost white.
Okay.
And so this we watched this for like 2 or 3 minutes, and what's this? Because we've never seen anything like that before.
Okay.
But then what happened was the little tiny beam came up towards the center of light being straight down, and then came all the way up and when it focused directly into our eyes. Now, this has to be something, because it lit up all of the buildings, all of the trees, everything around us was lit up like brighter than the sun. And we couldn't believe what was happening. So the light went out, and the big beam light went out. So now what's really strange here, wait a minute, really strange here is we talked about this, we finished dinner, and instead of going to listen to the radio, because we didn't have TV then, we went to bed. We were sort of bored, so we went to bed early. And then around 1:30, 2 o'clock or something, the aircraft comes, went off all around us. And so we're only four blocks from the beach, okay? And my dad was a block warden for that area because the war was on. This was 2 months after the war started.
Right. What city were you living in, Bill? Excuse me. What city?
Long Beach, California.
Right in Long Beach. Okay.
And so I have to say one thing ahead of this, in that Long Beach got a brand new breakwater about 6 months before this event took place. And they moved, the Pacific Fleet moved into that breakwater. And then the Atlantic Fleet came through the Panama Canal and it joined the Pacific Fleet. So you couldn't believe how many ships, battleships, cruisers, destroyers, aircrafters, just off of Rainbow Pier, in Long Beach. And now the war's going, so some of those are gone. But the point was, we're only 4 blocks from the beach, and what took place was unreal, because we went outside. Everybody in our neighborhood came out into the street. We looked up, and here was one very large circular vehicle. And if you take everybody in the audience, if you'll take your hand and open between your thumb and your fingers, and put your arm above your head, that's how big this thing was. It was not a little spot. Okay?
It's not about as big as big as a baseball.
Right. And it's not the one that was put in the newspaper. There's only really one photograph ever in the newspaper, and that showed 8 searchlights shining on a circular whatever.
Right. Kind of an oval-shaped object.
Yeah. This thing was moving slow. Moving from the ocean towards Hollywood in Los Angeles, going east towards the mountains. Now, when it got a little bit past the center of Long Beach, it stopped. And clear enough to see the explosions, which were thought to be on the bottom of it. Because it's all lit up with 15 or so searchlights.
Sure.
And it's bright. And that's an awfully large thing to be in the sky right above us.
Was it a round object, Bill? Was it round?
It was a round object.
Okay, like a ball.
It was a round object. All right. Yeah, no, not a ball. Flat.
Okay.
A round, flat
object.
All right. And so the explosions on the bottom of it, which obviously we figured out later on, it had some sort of a shield. Because that stood there for over an hour being fired at. Now, what also hasn't been published is that the entire time till like 4 o'clock, we think, there were other vehicles. None of them came underneath of it, but other smaller vehicles, 7 different classes of vehicles, came on either side of it. Some went up above it, and they continued to fly over very slow. And you couldn't miss with an aircraft gun. And of course, none of these that we saw got shot and then were brought down. So from our standpoint, where we saw it, nothing got shot down at all. We did, like Jeff said there, found out later that several of them did get taken down. Two of the smaller disc shape went down, one behind Mount Wilson, uh-huh. where the telescope is,
uh-huh.
and the other one went down just off of the new breakwater in Long Beach. So it was like less than a half a mile.
Well, the Navy got and that so one, and the Army got the other
Navy
one.
The Navy grabbed that one. Right, yes.
Now, let me ask you a question, Bill, if I can, please. This is fascinating because you saw this, you heard it, you felt it. The explosions going off overhead, the AA, what were they, 20 millimeter? I don't know how big they were, but they were
most
powerful.
Most of them were 3-inch anti-aircraft guns.
Okay.
Now, what's also interesting, Jeff, is that now we have half of the Navy still inside the breakwater.
Yeah.
Being prepared to go to the Pacific.
Yeah.
So every anti-aircraft gun on the Navy ships were firing at these vehicles.
See, nobody talks about this but you. That's fascinating.
Not only that, but remember, we had the Navy dry docks, an enormous Navy
repair station. Mm-hmm.
Shipyard. Mm-hmm. And so we found out later that many of the ships that were actually in dry dock were there was only a skeleton crew on board. Those fellows jumped out, got their ammunition, and started firing too. And they used up all of their ammunition. The Navy used up most of their ammunition, and the Coast Artillery used up everything they had. Now, roughly 3-4 vehicles did come down. Okay. But to stand underneath this situation for that many hours, and I'm going to say something else which really sounds ridiculous. We got bored at that. And we went to bed. Most of our neighbors watched it the whole night long.
Wow.
So it really operated from around 1:30, 1:30 to 2 o'clock, till around 4 o'clock.
Bill, I got another question, if I may. When you were earlier, 7:30 in that earlier evening on the deck, watching this light over the ocean, put a little beam down, and that beam ended up swinging up toward you and your brother and your dad and lighting up everything around the house like day, do you feel that there could be some kind of a connection between that event and you're getting, quote, bored with this thing and going to bed?
No question. Not even that. But many of the top Navy people who have done investigations on me were to the conclusion that actually we were zapped and I got zapped. Okay? And so what that had to do with the rest of my life in aerospace, I don't know. But the conclusion that the Navy surgeons came up with was we got zapped.
You were possibly changed at that moment for the rest of your life, is what you're suggesting, to some degree.
That's what has been said, yes. And as the night went on, we got bored again and went back to bed. And we didn't wake up until till around 4:30, 5 o'clock. I mean, it stopped. Now, don't say that nobody got hurt. Some people did. But stop and think of all of the ammunition that's being fired up there all over Southern California, from Santa Barbara to San Diego. It didn't just come in over Los Angeles, Long Beach, and Santa Monica. These vehicles, and there were like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of vehicles, And this point that I've made before in trying to explain what we thought took place was that there's only two ways that this could have been accomplished. One, a massive number of extraterrestrial military vehicles came in over the ocean, continued slowly to go across all of Los Angeles, California, and incidentally, we're saying, yes, Santa Barbara too, and San Diego. So what had to have happened is these vehicles had to go like out over the desert, turned south and turned north,
made
other turns going west, fly back out over the ocean, turn around, and come back in again. Because they could not have been this many of them operating that way. And the other approach is, yes, there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different classes of vehicle, small and large, even rectangular-shaped vehicles, triangular-shaped vehicles. Now, the newspapers only published one photograph with a small small light lit up the vehicle.
And the searchlight
shining off.
Yeah, you can see that online.
And nobody said anything about the great big ones. This the one was there for an hour. He parked there for an hour and let the guy shoot at him the whole time. Now, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. That's wild.
Let me do this, Bill.
Hold on. I think this is a good time to. I'm going to play this video. Look under Bill Tompkins in Guests, and you'll find several things to look at. What I want you to pull up is the YouTube video, original footage, and broadcast. You'll see it right there. Now, I'm going to play this 3 minutes long or so. It's got a broadcast, a newscast, and you've already discerned from listening to Bill that there were a number of things that went on that night that were never reported to the public. Never. But here's what it really sounded like on shortwave, coast to coast, that night in the Battle of Los Angeles.
Once again, Columbia correspondents in world capitals and in the fighting zones in the Western Pacific are ready to give you the latest news direct by shortwave radio. And now for news of our own West Coast, we take you to Los Angeles and the report of Byron Palmer. Anti-aircraft guns went into action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific wartime this morning. The anti-aircraft guns began barking during a blackout ordered by the 4th Interceptor Command at 2:25 a.m. The unidentified object, which some sources thought might be a blimp, moved slowly down the Pacific coast from Santa Monica and disappeared south of Long Beach. Army officials declined to comment on the possibility that the object might have been a blimp. However, it required nearly 30 minutes to travel some 25 miles, far slower than an airplane. Watchers on the rooftop of the Columbia Broadcasting Building in the heart of Hollywood could plainly see the flashes of guns and searchlights sweeping the skies in a wide arc along the coastal area. Concussion of the shells could be felt in downtown Los Angeles, 15 miles away. U.S. Army planes quickly took to the dark skies, but whether they contacted the object has not been announced. Army officials say they will not comment until they receive a full report of the action. Although some watchers say they saw airplanes in the air, semi-official sources say they probably were the U.S. Army's pursuit. Several observers say they saw one or more planes spotlighted by 20 or 30 searchlights. The object moved southward, presumably over Huntington Park at the western edge of Los Angeles, and on southward to about Long Beach on the coast. By 3:30 a.m., observers said the object appeared to be over the south of Long Beach. Searchlights closely followed the object down the coast and kept it centered in their glare. Shells frequently could be seen bursting near the object, but none appeared to hit it. The shooting stopped about 3:30 a.m. The shooting brought warfare to the front door of this city of 1.25 million population for the first time since December 7th. Already, it was alert to the presence off the Southern California coast of a Japanese submarine, which had pumped 25 shells into an oil field north of Santa Barbara Monday evening. Because of the presence of the submarine, a three-hour alert was ordered at dusk last night, and civilian authorities stood at their posts while the Army and Navy continued their search for the submersible. The evening alert ended at 10:23 p.m., but another was sounded at 2:22 a.m., and the blackout followed within 3 minutes. It covered Los Angeles County from Santa Monica to Pomona. At 2:27, all Southern California radio stations were ordered off the air, except those in San Diego. Approximately 20 minutes after the firing died down, the ship returned and headed westward from Long Beach toward Santa Monica. The guns went into action again, hurling round after round of shells at the object. The second barrage appeared to be closer to downtown Los Angeles, since watchers could hear the concussion of the guns more clearly and the flash of bursting shells was brighter. Then the ship disappeared for the second time over the ocean. We return you now to CBS in New York.
Well, there you go, Bill. And, you know, it's interesting. Wow. They called it a ship twice in that report. A ship.
Wow. They're a little bit off on both the start and the finish because it was much longer.
Yeah.
And they're way off when they say that the vehicle went parallel to the ocean, up and down, because it came in from the ocean, parked, and then went east after an hour stationary over Long Beach.
Right. Well, that's to be expected when you have so many people giving their bird's eye view of what happened. So I'm not surprised by that. It's a very unreliable way to actually get reality into words, but they did a pretty good job. They got the idea across that something very large had happened. They also admitted something which isn't talked about much, that the Army Air Force sent planes aloft immediately, because I have a friend who was an air raid warden, and she was ordered out of her home. She lived in Culver City. She had her hat on and all that. She said she watched the whole thing when it went over slowly above her. She said it was the most beautiful thing she'd ever seen. The color of it she'll never forget, she told me. And that this thing was up there, and she said, I was watching our aircraft, our fighters, 4 and 5 in a row, approaching it and firing and then peeling off before impact. So they were beating it perfectly, coming right at it, 4 or 5 wide, our fighter planes, shooting at it nonstop and then turning off at the last minute. She watched all of that.
Well, from people that I have talked to that were also there, military, naval, there were at least 4 of these really large ones that came in, because they came in over Santa Barbara all the way down to San Diego. And they only came from the ocean over Southern California going east. Nobody went, none of them stopped, turned, and went up and down the coast. So obviously, like you say, that was just, the radio report was just to try to cover the situation.
Fascinating to think that there were large craft and hundreds of small ones of different shapes and sizes. What you're describing is a major incursion into planet Earth from off-planet intelligence. This had nothing to do with the war, of course. It was simply a coincidence. I'm not sure that those... Tell me more.
Okay, hold on right there. Hold on. Remember, we were playing with nuclear. Okay? You don't do this out in the galaxy. And... if you are testing nuclear bombs, and that ricochets out into the galaxy,
I've heard that before. Yeah, that's picked up everywhere for some reason.
And, yeah, And the reason being that this was one of the reasons. Other extraterrestrial civilizations came here too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, this Los Angeles event was today understood to be Nordic naval operating battle groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came here not to do anything to us, but they were just monitoring after we had been playing with nuclear bombs.
Now, this is 1942 in February, and I don't know when the first test that we... It was in New Mexico. It was 44, I believe, or 45, the first bomb we actually lit off. The Manhattan Project was just beginning to come together in 42, 43. By the time late 43, they were up to full speed trying to come up with this this atomic bomb. So I'm wondering if they came here in 1942 prior to us exploding an atomic bomb, but being aware of the fact that we were already going down that road. That would make sense to me.
In other words, we didn't do the big thing on it and we talked, okay? Those came later.
That's right. We the first
but
one...
inside the laboratory.
Yeah, yeah.
Study to go do this. Now, this is a very good point because people... Most of us here don't visualize that extraterrestrials are so much further beyond us technically. I mean, it's staggering. So they have the ability to be out in the galaxy and watch what you're doing inside of a laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you say that's insane.
Not me.
Sorry.
These people have
that capability.
Mm-hmm.
And we were starting to do this. And that's a no-no out there.
Got it.
Okay?
Well, it should be a no-no here, too, but it's not.
You're right. And nuclear, well...
July 16, Bill, July 16, 1945 was our first official atomic bomb explosion, the Trinity test. And that shows you how quickly we got this together. Some suggest that the two bombs dropped on Japan, that one of them was a uranium bomb. The other was a plutonium bomb, I believe. And the uranium bomb came from uranium that we captured from a surrendering German U-boat off New England. And that a lot of the uranium we used in that bomb was actually enriched by the Germans.
Yes.
So, okay.
People were playing with this. Then the decision was made to use it. That came much later. But for the audience here to believe that extraterrestrials have unbelievable technical experience, they can accomplish unbelievable things. And one of the most important is the fact that they can mind control everybody on the planet. And I know people don't want to hear this. They're saying, well, gee whiz, nobody's going to control my mind. Unfortunately, this is a fact, technically. And all of us are controlled, some of us more than others.
Well, we have our own government trying to mind control the masses through the cell phone towers, through the electric grid, through all kinds of EMF emitters. So mind control is something that we're well advanced in, too, although we can't compare with what they had. But it's interesting to hear you say that they were aware of our early nuclear testing in university laboratories and so forth. Yeah.
Okay. We have to stop there. We have only 5 minutes left, but I would invite all of you to go listen to the remainder and listen to all of Bill's fabulous interviews. And they're all there. And thanks to Frank Chile, we were able to make the connection. All of it was done here. We got it all from Bill, and it's all there. Not all, but we got a lot of it. So let me go to George first. Fascinating to hear, George, that there was some activity before the battle that perhaps directly impacted Mr. Bill Tompkins.
Well, there's certainly indication that the UFOs, at least some aliens, have what amounts to as time machines that can predict the future and so on. And in any, we have quite a few abductees, that sounds funny, but they leave their homes before they they return. Or the point is, at the time, with many observers, the time is just all mixed up, and that something that would have happened here may have, in fact, determined by moving of time that they have this ability to do. Now, I know it sounds preposterous, but it's possible. And I think that's partially what went on there, that movementing around of the craft and everything. And also they use force fields to keep the craft from being hit by various weapons. Matter of fact, sometimes they'll even return the fire. You hit a fire a missile at them, your missile may come back at you. And that's when we pretty much stop trying to shoot them down.
Right, yeah.
The other thing is that there are craft in space. We don't know for sure whether they're American, you know, Russian, Chinese, or alien, but they're up there, and people should realize that it is a fact that they exist and they're up there. And most likely they're part of our own naval program that Bill was talking about through all these years, that he actually helped to participate in building.
Very good. Okay, George, let me bring Frank in here for a minute, then you're going to go to bed, and I hope that eye gets better real quick.
Usually it takes a couple of days to fix them.
Does it seem to help the macular degeneration, this treatment?
Well, it pretty much keeps it at the same
good
level. It doesn't get really much better. I will say that I'm getting more color back, seeing tree color and stuff
good
in my right eye.
Good.
My left eye is 20/20, so I'm not blind per se.
Oh, you can always put an eye patch on if you go to a party and never know.
He's all going to a party on Sunday.
Yeah.
Frank's taking us to a party on Friday, Sunday, Friday, Saturday or Sunday.
You going to a party, Frank?
Yep. George and Janet are going to be my guests. I'm taking them to Patty Blackwell. She's having her end of summer party.
There'll
probably be about maybe 75 or 80 people there. Just very interesting folks.
And they're all interested in UFOs.
Yep.
And I think Frank and I, like, we're big, important people.
Well, let me be the first to say that you are important people.
Well, at least in the UFO field.
You're too kind.
That may be the most important field of all, in my view.
Well,
I think we agree.
Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man who walked on the moon, said that, in fact, is the most important subject.
That's been my feeling for a long time. So Frank, again, is responsible for all of these wonderful conversations that you now can listen to forever at Rents and enjoy them, share them. It's just amazing to sit
it's
back
just
and listen to
this. It's a treat hearing a master storyteller such as Bill with such incredible detail in his memory of these events.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just scratched the surface in this tribute. I mean, we could go on and on and on.
Yeah.
Right. I've got a lot on my filers files and nationalufocenter.com that they can look at the actual pictures of objects in the air and so on.
Well, you put that link up with that little compilation I have if you want. That'd be good for people to see.
Too.
Yeah, very good. George, thank you very much for staying up. It's great, always great to spend time with you.
Okay,
go to sleep.
Happy Labor Day to everybody out there.
Say hi to Janet.
Okay.
All right. And Frank, thank you. Have a wonderful weekend. I'm glad you're going to a party.
Thank you. My pleasure. You too. Get some rest, Jeff, and enjoy this holiday weekend.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.
Okay. There's our extended tribute to the wonderful William Tompkins. And I really do hope you step in and sit back and listen to these remarkable interviews that he left for all of us. Okay, that's our Friday night program. And let's see, what we got, a holiday weekend. I think that means fun for most people. So we'll see. Monday we'll be here. It is a holiday, but we will be here. So have yourselves a good time. Take care. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. And we will talk soon.